Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This episode of Whiskey Riff Raff is brought to you by Templeton Whiskey. Originally distilled in the Prohibition era, Templeton Whiskey has always been rooted in the notion that every bottle is an opportunity to share their small-town strong spirit with the world. From their flagship variety of rye whiskey to the top-shelf specialties, there's something for everyone to enjoy, whether sipping it neat while relaxing on the porch or mixing it in your favorite cocktail for a party. Templeton Whiskey isn't just a liquor brand for when you need a strong drink. It's a way of life.
We got our guy Randall King here. Episode brought to you by Templeton Rye Whiskey. We had a little more because the schedules got a little thrown off. So we've been sitting here having a little extra. But Randall, what's going on, man? How you been?
Been good, brother. Been good. Is the whiskey good?
It is good, yeah. Do you drink rye at all? Because I just now started getting into it a little more. And I'm like, man, I really like it. It's
yeah, nice. Man. I'm to the point now in my life where if I drink whiskey, it's going to be a sipping whiskey, and I'm having I like it for the flavor. Yeah, I don't have crazy on whiskey no more. This shit got me in trouble.
Yeah,
I know. None of that rot gut bottom of the barrel stuff anymore.
What's the drink of choice then these days? If you're just beer,
Casamigos.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big tequila connoisseur. I love a good tequila. Love it all. Blanco, Reposado, like Añejo. I'll take
you, Texas guys. Yeah, it's like
have you had Straits tequila?
I have, man, and that's
really smooth. Crazy,
like, right, standing behind you, that's funny. yeah, man, his tequila's so smooth. It's dead. That's just dangerous because it doesn't hit you right away. You take a drink, you're like, man, this tastes good. I feel good. And then, like, you're half a bottle in before you know it, and then it hits you, and then you're just gone.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of Texas, Texas Tech, you went there, right? That's where you...
I did. Yeah, man, I went... I didn't graduate.
I was going to ask, are you one of those, like, you kind of... One day will go... You see a lot of, like, NFL players, like, when they retire, they go back and get their degree or whatever. Are you one of those where you kind of want to finish the job one day, or you don't care?
Hell no. I'm for business, man. And I went for three semesters, and I got one good semester out of it, which was my very first semester that I went to Tech. And it's because I was actually focused on my classes. I don't know if you've ever been to Lubbock, Texas and walked around. No. I'm sure you've been any college campus you go to.
Yeah.
You understand when you walk around. As a man, the distractions that are at college, you know, and my focus was not on school, and I stayed in my dorm room writing songs, and I blew the next two semesters off and wasted a lot of my dad's money, and I called him and had to tell him what I was going to do. And I was like, look, this whole business degree, it's not working out for me, and I'm not going to keep going and put money in this and wasting your time, wasting your money, wasting my time. And I switched over to South Plains College in Loveland, which is, Waylon Jennings started a studio there. There's been all sorts of people that come out of South Plains. I got a sound tech degree and started grinding, learning how to produce records, which is where we're at now.
Yeah, well, McConaughey, I just saw Matthew McConaughey clip. We were talking about his dad. When he told his dad he wasn't going to be a lawyer, that he wanted to go be an actor, thinking his dad, I think maybe would have reacted differently, but it was more like, I think he was happy to hear it, be like, oh, you sound like you actually are going to do what you want to do. And then that's all that matters. Right.
And you know what you want to do. You have a clear plan for it, you know, and that speaks volumes. I'm actually reading his book.
Oh, so Greenlight.
Man, that's such a great book.
The stories are just fucking,
they're crazy. Like the things he went through are just not like nobody has those kind of stories like that. Like that book is intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dropped out of law school, but the government paid for it. So I still am on the hook for that, you know, not my dad.
Yeah. I was going to say when you can't get the co-sign loans, I'm in that boat too, man.
He took money out of his 401k, but everything else was student loans. And I still got a stack of student loans from all that. But technically, you know, Texas Tech has 18 grand in my money, so I call myself a Red Raider. Degree or not. I earned that shit. I earned it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, me and Steve went to I grew up in a pretty small town, and Steve grew up in a smaller town as well, across the Indiana border. But we went to college in Chicago, and I think now we both like football starts up. Didn't have a football team, so now that like football's starting back, we're like, man, we like missed that whole college game day, man. Tailgate Saturday. I mean, there's guys 45 years old who put on the polo and they go to the bar on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. And I'm like, fuck, I want to do that. Yeah. I want to do that. I need a school. Yeah.
My loyalty now just revolves around gambling and who won me money the previous week and who do I think is going to cover. Like that's my. Man.
I love that's gambling's half the fun in watching football in my book. But the whole town of Lubbock, when it's game day, just the entire environment changes. It's insane. And the tailgates that they throw out there, when they've got a full stage out there that they do big shows. I mean, William Clark Green's a Red Raider, so he'll go out there and he'll play the big stage out there at the tailgate. And like those are, you don't even have to go to the game. Like, just
Josh Abbott too, big Texas Tech guy.
Abbott, Flatland, all those, mm-hmm. you know,
all those panhandlers.
Yeah, that's true. So you're from a small town too in West Texas, right? And then you went to school at Texas Tech. And now moved to Nashville, I believe. Like, do you look back and kind of the small town feel and light? Like, did that help kind of find your path to songwriting and playing? Or do you think it would have been different if you grew up in a different area?
Yeah, man. I think about it growing up in like a city. Sure, you know.
Yeah.
I think country music's so much more relatable to small towns because it's more simplified. It's it's dirt road anthems. You know what I mean? Like it's tailgate, back road, growing up, small town living. That's country music and that just really go hand in hand. So for me, I don't know that if I had grown up in a big city, if it would have if I'd be where I'm at, you know. It's your character. You're shaped by where you're growing up.
You wouldn't have that voice either, probably, that little twang.
Yeah, that too.
And you're a West Texas guy. What's kind of the difference between like the West Texas versus East Texas for people who don't know? I've only been to Austin.
What's a big once. Difference?
Like, can you kind of explain a couple of the nuances?
Just it's its own country.
Like, it's so big and vast and different across the state. Man,
Texas is literally, like, when they say it can be its own country, like, we could literally branch off and be our own country. Like, we can.
You have like, the 10th biggest economy in the world or something like that.
You know, I live in Nashville, but my girlfriend thinks I'm crazy. But I live in Nashville, but I keep my Texas license. She's like, why do you make shit harder on yourself? Just go get a Tennessee license. You live here. And I was like, I don't feel like at that point, like I'm always a Texan, but
that's official.
And if Texas revolts and we do pull away, like I want
back in. So,
like there's different cultures within the state. So the Panhandle, which is where I'm from, isn't technically West Texas. It's the Panhandle, which is the most northern part of Texas. So it's not North Texas. It's not West Texas. It's kind of weird. It's its own little thing. And honestly, like the area up there kind of reflects Oklahoma to a point as far as like landscape goes. And then you have West Texas, which is like El Paso and Big Bend. And I don't know a whole lot of people that are from that area. Most of those people are kind of Charlie Stout vibes. I don't know if you know who Charlie Stout is. Songwriter out of West Texas. Just very Western, Americana type vibe. And then you got East Texas, which is its own entity, which is like the Whiskey Myers type of a vibe.
Swampier. Is that what you said, Wes?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of swampy. But it's mostly like that culture is very backwoods, rowdy, redneck, and it's just got its own, like it's like a rocking vibe. It's just they even talk a little different in East Texas versus like West Texas. So it's different culture for sure. Great people all around. You're not gonna run across bad people no matter where you go in Texas for sure. But very different. And then we don't like Austin just sits on.
Dallas is finance guys. Houston oil guys.
Yeah, Houston's oil. Dallas is finance for sure. Fort Worth is Cowboy Stockyards. And then Austin, you know, being as political as it is, some people are like, Austin, we don't even know if that's Texas. Everything around Austin.
What are some of your favorite, you know, when you go play, like maybe it's a small town or maybe it's bigger cities. Do you have favorites across the country outside of Texas even? Maybe it's a smaller place. Maybe it's a bigger venue, a bigger city. Do you have any like kind of when you see it on the calendar, you kind of circle it and you're excited to go? Not to throw anybody under the bus. You're like everywhere, of course. But you know,
Well, I mean, God, there's some where I'm at today, you know, the Crystal Palace is in Bakersfield. Honestly, that's been a bucket list since I was a kid. I've wanted to come out here. Me and my dad wrote out goals for myself when I was a kid because he said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I said, "Well, first off," I said, "Daddy, I don't want to offend you or nothing, but I don't want to be a trucker." And he goes, "Well, hell, son, I don't want you to be a trucker. What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to play country music." And I actually said, "Well, I don't want to be away from home as often as you are. I want to play country music." Traded one road
one truck for a bus.
Yeah, man. So we wrote out goals of all the places that I wanted to play and the things I wanted to do.
That's a good one, practice.
Yeah, man. I'm a firm believer in you speak it, you believe it, you see it. Mm-hmm. And so we spoke those goals into existence and those bucket lists. And so far, like on the list was the Ryman. And I got to knock that out in 2019. Billy Bob's knocked that out in 2019. Green Hall knocked that out as a headliner in 2020. I've gotten to play all these places, and the Troubadour was listed on there and the Crystal Palace. And I knocked off the Troubadour in Los Angeles, California yesterday. And we're knocking out Bakersfield today. So there's so many.
Picturing you in LA is like a fun
thought. Yeah. What's a Troubadour crowd like? Cause I know where the venue is. I've driven by it, but like it's such a historic place, but like, and a lot of country acts roll through there. But yeah, I'm man. Almost like
it's not
the crowd come from.
Yeah, it comes from the act and who they and little their fan base that they pull, because it's not a built-in crowd. Like It's not a bar that people are just going to go buy a ticket just to hang out at the Troubadour. Yeah. It's a venue. And the people that go in there are the clientele of the fan base. So for us, you know, we put, you know, it's a 400 cap room in our first time in LA. I think we put 200, something like that, on a Wednesday. Like, that would take that as a big win for us. And it was my fan base. They were rowdy, honky tonk. Like, we turned the legendary Troubadour that kickstarted Elton John in America. Like, so many famous people have played this place. Like, Guns N' Roses had their big debut there. So it's not necessarily a honky tonk, but we, by God, turned it into one in Los Angeles, California last night.
Nice. I like that.
I asked you before we got started, do you have any Buck Owens covers on the repertoire tonight?
Yeah, man. I'm going to have to practice them a little bit. It's been a minute since I played anything. But, like, if I bust one out, like, Tiger by the Tail or Act Naturally. Mm-hmm. And Act Naturally, that's easy. They're going to put me in the movie. It's like, come on.
Easy.
Man, I love it. They actually let me go in. I'm sitting in the green room here, but Buck Owens has his own – had his own private green room, and they let me go through and walk through. And in the closet, and it's next to his shower in there, he's still got all his clothes. Like, he's got a nudie suit in there. And I went in and just checked it out. Like, man, there's so much history in this place. It's unreal. I'm excited. Nah, it's going to be cool.
What we also, another thing we were talking about, some of the people that you were talking about, Wes, before we hit record, behind Wes, a lot of different albums we've got sent to us, some signed, Muscadine Bloodline. We were kind of talking about them. Who right now, maybe your friend or whatever, are you kind of digging with what they're doing out there? Because you're the perfect, and I'm not trying to just compliment you real quick, but like, you have an energy and like kind of a, I don't know, I hate to use the word, I hate the word vibe, but you have a word, like a vibe that works with that 90s feel, but you're true country, but I don't feel like you're a guy that's like, you can kind of accept other forms of country. Probably like, hey, that's a catchy song. It might be pop country, but that's fine. Yeah. So are there any surprises about maybe something you're digging right now or somebody you're friends with or
like that? You know, first off, I'm a music lover. I love it all. I take music for what it is, and I appreciate artistry. There's a lot of guys that are kicking ass coming up. We've taken on quite a few of them and putting them on shows with us. And then there's guys that are just like Muscadine, blowing up, doing things the independent way, just knocking open doors that people are telling them you can't go through. And they're just saying, no, we're doing it. And then we're doing it our way, and they're killing it. And I love it. And I'm super proud of them. Some of the young kids that I just love, man. One's my buddy, Jake Worthington. I can listen to Jake Worthington sing. He can sing literally the phone book. Like, I love his voice. I love him. He's a great dude. And there's some young kids that are really catching my ear, catching my eye with what they're doing on stage, their performance, their energy. That's Braxton Key. I love that kid, man. He's killing it. Kylie Fry smokes it. The young kid that I came across at judging a songwriter competition in Stephenville for Larry Joe Taylor, a kid named Palmer Anthony, just smokes it, dude. Great.
We did some stuff on him. Yeah. We did a couple little intro article on him.
Yeah, man, he's a badass. We've had him on a few shows too, but there's so many great acts out there, man. And like I said, I'm just a big music fan. I love it all. What? Kobe Cook's out there killing it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I love Kobe.
We're gonna have him on.
We got him on coming on soon. Yeah,
yeah.
Here's a question I thought of. I told Wes that no guest will ever answer. But who's your best or closest friend in the music industry that's an artist whose music you hate? You're probably not going to answer that,
or don't necessarily like.
No, I'm not gonna do that.
I was like, this got to be a thing though, because I know like in Nashville, this is such a hodgepodge of. I mean, you got traditional.
Oh, for sure.
You got '90s. You got like massive superstars. You have
some hip hop, country stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you have like the hip hop blending in with it. Like, and I was like, there's got to be like friendships that kind
of just like a nice guy who's like, you're like, oh, I love this dude. I'll drink a beer with him, but I don't really like his music.
Yeah,
but, I mean, everyone, you know, everyone has different opinions on songs and artists and things. I ain't gonna name names. I just don't like fake. Mm-hmm. If you
we're with you on that.
And if it's something that you're not, like, it's not believable, but it's not genuine. Like, I don't know. I'm just,
yeah.
If you're gonna be fake, just be authentic. If you're gonna pull, if you're built your music around a certain brand, don't switch. Don't chase shit. Stay true to your brand.
Mm, yeah, I appreciate the choir here.
Yeah.
Off camera conversations.
I think the problem is sometimes people don't have a brand or an identity, and they get to Nashville and they start getting a little bit of traction. And then it's like, well, what do I got to do to get more? What do I got to do to be famous? And then they're willing to kind of bend to stuff. Where a guy like yourself, you're like, you know what you want to sing, you know the music that you like from the beginning. And there was never like, hey, you know, let's have Randall rap. Yeah. And it's like
you get drafted as a tight end and they're like, we're going to make you an outside linebacker. We don't trust you. Right. No, it's like, you know, which happens. It happens in sports. And when guys retire early, a lot of times you just hear them. They're like
quarterback to tight end.
Yeah. I'm not passionate about what I'm doing and I'm not putting in the effort that I need to be. And then they're done. They go do something else with their life. And it's like, oh, I see that. I get like, I'm impressed. I'm like, that person had left millions of dollars on the table to do it. But with music, what we tend to see is like people keep changing. Well, this single didn't work. Fuck it. Let's go try this thing. This didn't work. It's 3 years later from new album. Let's go try that one. It's like, you see it a lot, like a lot. Well,
the machine, you know, the machine works differently for different people. There's a lot of people that'll get signed to a major label and they've got a great voice. Got a good look, but they haven't found themselves musically yet. And then all of a sudden they have a number one on radio and then they get tossed out there as an opener on these tours. And they have no idea what they're doing because they've never played live. So I think it's a really important thing to find yourself as an artist, hopefully before that success happens. But I mean, you know, you got to congratulate them on the success. Like, dude, that's incredible. Everybody works for that. But you want to be ready and prepared for that success and have it in the tank, knowing who you are already. Otherwise, everyone's going to pull you every different direction. And then you start chasing number ones, and that's when you get in trouble. It's like going into a writing room in Nashville and going, hey, we're going to write a radio hit today. Well, that's a joke because you don't know what a radio hit is. You never do. So, and you start chasing that kind of thing and you're pigeonholing your songs into a watered down version of a song because you're chasing something that.
Have you been a part of those writing sessions where that's verbatim? One time.
I took, again, I won't name names, but my publishing company set me up with the right. And I had this idea in my head and I already knew where I wanted to go. I knew what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a Keith Whitley vibe. And it was a song called Hey Moon, which I put on my Leanna EP. And I took Hey Moon to this writer I'd never written with. I had no idea if he was going to vibe it or not. And I pitched it. He was like, I dig it. Then all of a sudden my melody started changing and the beat started changing and it was a pop song. And I said, hold on, man, if we're going to write this, like, I know what I want it to be. I want it to be old school. I want it to be this vibe. And I was like, man, I just really need to write a hit today. We need to aim for radio. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what.
I need a paycheck, man.
I said, I'm going to take this song. We're going to put it back pocket, and I'll save it for a different write. And we'll write if that's what you want to do. Said, I'll write that. I can do it. But you were not doing it with this idea. And we wrote some kind of bubblegum pop song that I don't even remember what it was.
Sitting on a shelf somewhere.
It'll never see the light of day under my brand. I can promise you. Yeah. But that kind of thing happens. But
I think Chris Stapleton even said, like, anyone who thinks they can just sit down and write a hit is full of shit. Like,
yeah,
I think that's a direct quote too. Like, you just don't know what's going to catch and what's not. And anyone who thinks they know it some guy, Ashley Gorley, can write a hit seemingly every other damn day. But like,
well, that's because he practices the art of songwriting. He writes every single day. He's focused in and locked in. And when you start having a bunch of hits, you're inspired. So you get even more ideas. So Ashley Gorley, he's phenomenal. Yeah. Dude, just one of the top tier writers.
I always loved as I've gotten older, I appreciate more and more the even like, I don't want to misspeak, the Alan Jackson's West last album. Did he like write every song by himself? I know Aaron Watson did that recently, but
he had like a Merle cover.
Alan Jackson's like probably my all time favorite. And like, he's like always writing his stuff and doing his thing. And I'm like, not that I have a problem with cutting outside songs, but you tend to like feel it differently, even with the young guys. And I think what you see Zach Bryan blowing up and not being on radio, it's like, it's pretty obvious why. You know, it doesn't take a rocket, as we like to say, rocket surgeon to figure it out. But hey, like if you want to go to Nashville and try to chase stuff, it's like, just like that, right? 5, 7, 6, 8, 10 years go by. And you're like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah.
All of a sudden now this is the hip thing. It's like, no, the hip thing is always going to be like authenticity, I think.
Yeah, man. And what's funny is the hip thing is constantly changing. By the time you figure out what's the new cool thing and you start chasing it,
you're late.
You can't chase what's cool. That's not a thing.
If you remember when Sam Hunt blew up, which was hilarious because it was kind of around the time like What's Your Riff started, like in that was such a big thing. And it was like Chris Stapleton too, after the Timberlake thing, when they were getting like bearded guys on The Voice to try to find like burly bearded guys.
Yeah.
It's like, but you can't sing like the guy. But like when Sam Hunt did his thing, which was very different, and you know, some people loved it, obviously a lot of people hated it. But then you saw all these like guys come to Nashville and be like, I'm going to wear the long tee. I'm going to do a weird haircut. I'm going to wear flat bill hat. It's like, that doesn't make the thing work, man. And it's just like a lot of those guys that we knew or saw from the periphery, like they're not even making music anymore. Like it's over. Like,
well, I don't know. It's a good thing to see country music and cowboy hats coming back around.
Amen.
But now you're watching those same kind of people putting on cowboy hats.
Yeah.
Oh, but, yeah. And we don't want to name names again, but we all know who we're talking about.
Well, it's okay. It's a trend. It's a great thing. Like I said, because I'm cowboy hat. I'm country. So
Right now you got McConaughey vibes, which
I think. Let's bring that back around. But back to what kind of brand have you built for yourself and the fans that you've built? Are your fans going to accept that because they know you as this? So you start changing things. I don't know. I just think, I think being true to your brand is a very important thing as an artist.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to me, I feel like you are one of the most like prime examples of like a guy that's kind of cut from the same cloth as George Strait or Keith Whitley, like really, really just like tight, good country music, honky tonk country music. Shot Glass was like such a phenomenal record. And like, me, it's like such a breath of fresh air in a way, and kind of pushing that pendulum back towards some of the stuff that, you know, we all kind of grew up on.
Yeah. Dude, well, thank you. Honestly, I'm just trying to put out music I love.
Honky tonk.
I don't love it. How are you going to love it?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, come on.
You got to do it. Like, we got to send you some more stuff. I know we have, but
yeah. Hey, I'm for it. I got a couple shirts in my bag, actually.
And your girlfriend as well. I forgot. I'm like fiance girlfriend.
She looks better in this shirt than I do.
But we just launched our Yellowstone, which was exciting, Yellowstone collection. So what's going on? So some of that stuff is cool. But funny story to kind of switch gears. Wes, did you write it? If you want to kind of take this one, the whole car chase hilarious thing we posted. That
yeah, just the other day. I think it was last weekend. guy takes Texas police on a 60-mile chase that ends up at your concert, throws on a concert team.
They're doing like 130, 540 mile an hour chase, something like that, which is like at that point, like your vehicle starting to get airborne. You have no control over it. That's the scariest chase you can have. That's how people die. So fortunately, he crashed in the field behind the stage. And then it was so weird. I was sitting in the back lounge on the bus and I was on the phone with my girl. And like, I just hear a bunch of commotion. And like, all of a sudden my guys are running back there in the back, gearing up, grabbing my hats and shit and running out the door. And I was like, baby, I think I'm gonna hang up and figure out what the hell is going on. Like all of a sudden there's just a bunch of, now the blue lights are showing up. I'm like, something's wrong. Something's weird. So I hang up and my tour manager comes and finds me and goes, hey, just stay on the bus. I'm going to get everybody back on the bus. We don't need to get involved with this. This dude crashed the truck, had his duffel bag, tossed it underneath the opener's bus. And this is all with the opener's on stage. So now the cops are there. They've shut the show down. So he's on stage like, well, shit. So he's got to come off stage. They lock the whole venue down. Nobody in, nobody out. This guy had tossed a duffel bag under the opener's shuttle bus. Got in between the bus, like my bus and the trailer. Shucked his hoodie, ran inside, walked up to my merch guy, bought a T-shirt, which it's our like our Desert Coyote T-shirt.
Kind of a genius move, not gonna lie, for a criminal. Yeah,
smart. I'm actually disappointed because his mugshot, he wasn't wearing the shirt. So,
but he was super chipper though.
He was happy in that
promo.
They took it off.
It was our number one selling shirt that night, by the way, because everyone's asking, "What shirt did he buy? We gotta buy it." So like that shirt blew up for us. But he buys the shirt and then I guess he snuck out of the venue somehow. We I don't know. They found him like I think a town over or something. But there was an open crime scene, so the show couldn't kick back off until they verified that he wasn't anywhere around. So the opener went back on for the last 30 minutes, closed it, and then we went on a little bit later. And I made sure when I got up there to thank the officers that were working the scene, and I thanked the town and thanked the driver because, look, I've never had the opportunity to play an open crime scene in my career, so that was cool. That was a first.
What? Do you know what he did?
Yeah,
just like a warrant running or something.
From my understanding, I think he had robbed somebody. I don't quote me on it because I'm not sure.
Would explain the duffel bag.
What I heard, he robbed somebody and then just stole the vehicle at a gas station. I've seen a couple of people tweet me out about like, that was my truck. So I think it was their truck. Who knows? Yeah, literally a couple of people. So I'm like, I don't know.
One of your truck. It's not all of your truck.
It ain't my truck.
Yeah, the guy's super happy in the mugshot.
He's cheesy. He's just smiling. I was like,
he just wanted to make the local paper.
Speaking, you mentioned the nudie suit earlier and places you played. Grand Ole Opry, we had this kind of bookmark to ask you about too. You made your debut there as well earlier this year. You had a nice little outfit.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Is that one of those things where you're like, man, I'm going to get some custom built, or did you have that thing just waiting for that?
Some new alligator boots. Like,
I had a custom built. Yeah. So as soon as I found out in January that I was gonna play the Opry, which I found out because I was doing a co-write with Marty Stewart.
Nice.
We got to ride.
No big deal.
Yeah, man. And
it's got a hit or two.
Text me before the ride. He goes, make sure you dress nice. And I was like, okay.
Well, you do see some guys go up there with their look.
Yeah.
And you're just like, come on.
Yeah, man.
Like, you don't go to a wedding like that.
Yeah. So I showed up right with Marty, and I'm dressed pretty good, at least decent. And I didn't think about taking a picture with Marty or anything. That's like, I was just excited to be in the room. And if we get done, my manager's like, let's take a picture. I was like, okay. And he's like, I can't figure out this phone. I don't know if it's on photo or video. I don't know. I was like, sorry, Marty. He's just kind of senile. He's getting up in his age. Like, it'll be all right. Marty's like, it's okay. Is it on video? He goes, yeah. I was like, well, this is weird. Why do you want it on video? And then he just started it. And I was saying, you've probably seen it. It was on, I think we tweeted it out and put it on TikTok. He advised me to play the Opry, and I was just mind blown. And as soon as I found that out, I tried to get on with like the main nudie suits. There's a guy named Manuel that builds all the suits. He's built suits since like, I think the 60s, things like that. He's like known as the nudie suit guy. It took a long time in the process, and I couldn't work it out with him. So I went with a lady that was actually out of Texas. She's Russian. Her name's Vera. She builds a lot of jackets. She builds a lot of John Party's jackets, and done a lot of work with a lot of good people. And the fact that she was in Fort Worth made things really easy, because I bus call right out of there. So I'm flying back and forth from Nashville to Fort Worth all the time. And she was wonderful. I showed up, told her what I wanted. She built it from scratch. And my Opry debut for me wasn't for me. I wanted to use that platform in a way where I could showcase my sister and tell her story and dedicate it to her. So I wanted this nudie suit. I wanted this suit to be a reflection of her. Her favorite color was black, which is why the album cover was black. Her favorite rose was the Yellow Rose of Texas, which was also on the album cover. And it was all over that jacket. I had her signature that she had been practicing signing her name in a little notebook that actually ended up being her will. She had wrote out all her wishes and gave it to my oldest niece to give to me when she passed so that I could carry out her wishes. And I found her signature on one of the pages, and I used it. And that's on the album cover, and that's also on the jacket, on the sleeve. Then I put my logo on the back, and she rhinestoned it up, made it look real cool. And had brand new black Captain boots and a brand new black Resistol. And we went up there with that shine, and I shined for her.
Nice. That's a hell of a story right there.
What was what was your set list during that for the people who didn't catch it?
Well, you only get two songs. So I made sure that I wanted to show off my personality too. It was the first time in the world seeing me on the Opry. So I played Roger Miller Lite.
Nice. That's such a good song, man.
I love that song so much.
So good. I listened to it four times today.
I was pushing a sled at the gym with it today.
I was buying my bottle of Templeton today.
I honestly, not just because you were coming on today, but it's like every time a podcast, I'm like, I'm going to listen to their music beforehand as well. So
yeah. Hell yeah. That's awesome, man. I love that song. That's a beer drinking tip the hat to one of my favorites. And I wrote that with Brandon Kinney. And so I wanted to show up my personality. So we kicked off to that. And the first words I said was, well, it looks like y'all ready to honky tonk. So let's talk. And then we kicked right into Roger Miller. And then after that, I told him the story of my sister and dedicated it to her. And I closed it with my version of I'll Fly Away. There's no way I wasn't going to play the Opry. There's no way I was going to play the Opry and not play I'll Fly Away.
Yeah. And that was on the EP dedicated to your sister. And then also on the Shot Class, the little final song.
Yes, sir.
Great performance.
In the record. Thank you, man. Thank you. It was pretty wild. It was a long day.
Before we go, a couple fan questions. We covered one about what you're drinking these days. Somebody wanted to know the pros and the cons. You're kind of in Nashville now, but what are the kind of the differences with the Texas music scene, Nashville? Any pros and cons that you kind of see, or is it kind of from your vantage point, you're kind of all over the place now, so you kind of don't see as much of the difference?
I'm sorry, we asked that question.
Did I cut out? The pros and cons of like the Texas music scene versus maybe the Nashville music scene, kind of now that you've moved to Nashville and kind of came from Texas, do you kind of see any major differences or the good and the bad?
Starting out in Texas, the biggest difference for me was the mentality behind the songwriting, behind the artistry, especially in Lubbock, starting out in Lubbock at the Blue Light. I was so different from all the guys that started out of the Blue Light. I'm really the only honky tonker that came out of there. My music is traditional country with a honky tonk edge. The focal point and the mindset between everybody that was out there at the Blue Light was not to be like each other. It was to be different, be unique, and find your path and your channel as a songwriter. And the environment of being around all those songwriters, we championed each other. Mm. We wanted to see each other succeed. We wanted to see each other do great. And we wanted to be right there, part of it. I started out on the singer-songwriter nights on Monday at the Blue Light with Coletto Cordero from Flatland. Like, that's my boy. And watching them succeed doing their own thing. Nobody went and chased what they were doing. There was no chase. It was find your own path and be good friends, be good to each other and cheer each other on, champion each other. With Nashville, it's a lot of chase. You mm-hmm. go up there and see people trying to chase success because everybody wants success. Everybody's looking for one. And that can water down music so fast that you just create generic blend of songs and artistry that people don't really find themselves and find who they are to separate themselves. They're just chasing what's hot. Mm-hmm. And that's not always, obviously that's not always the case up there, but you see it a lot and you see it a lot more up there than you do in a scene that's built to champion individuality mm-hmm. and artistry.
And you guys talk about one thing I brought up, Texas guys, everyone we've had on, I feel like almost, and never once as a Nashville person brought this up, is the word brand. And like you guys owning your brand and being very cognizant of your like brand, not changing your image. It's about, no, this is me. I am this person. This is my, like Whiskey Riff is our brand. Like our voice matters. We can't start posting about this or that because like that doesn't make any fucking sense, you know? So it's like, but it's the same thing. It's like the brand, and you guys are very good at that. I feel like guys that have and gals that have come out of there feel like all of you have a very clear vision of that.
Yeah, man.
And what it is, or what you know it's going to be, but not changing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of those guys that are having major success in Nashville have absolutely found that brand.
Yeah.
I mean,
Luke Combs comes to mind.
That's who I was about to say. That's fishing shirt country, son. That's cold beer on the lake. Like as soon as you see his image, as soon as you hear his songs, you're like, okay, I get it. I see it. It's clear as day. So there's guys like that. That's why they're so successful, because they have found that brand. And you know, that's, he knew at the gate who he was, and he never steered away from that at all. That's his brand. And I thought that's so important. It'd be like if for me, I would have been heartbroken if Keith Whitley would have been doing things like Rhinestone Cowboy. That's completely against his brand and his music and who he is. I'm a big fan of Keith Whitley because of who he is. And granted, I'm also a big fan of Glenn. You know, but to start get steering away from your brand of music, it's okay to be creative. It's okay to do something a little bit different, but to like completely disown what you've built and who you are, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorite things talking to you, the artists and what we do. It's like when I feel similar, so I appreciate how you said that.
It's interesting too. Like you could almost make the argument that a girl who wants to get into country music could move to a town like Lubbock, knowing that they can like hone their craft at a place like the Blue Light and like a very organic and independent way. And there's a scene there. There's clearly a scene for it there. And so many artists have come up playing out of the Blue Light, you know? So it's like, there's almost a case to like, fuck Nashville, man, move to Lubbock and hone your craft. Once you get it going, maybe then move to Nashville and write with some big songwriter. Yeah. You know, like,
I think the biggest point to it is Nashville's not the problem by any means. Nashville has been incredible. I've been writing in Nashville since 2016. There's nothing wrong with that town. It's the chase of not figuring out who you are as an artist and then trying and going all over the place until you figure it out or never figure it out. Like that's, you gotta know who you are. That's the biggest deal.
Right on. What's next for you, man? What else are you working on? You got a new writing for the next album already? Or are you still kind of living on man. Shot glass?
I'm always writing. I don't ever stop. I've got, if we're being honest, I've written my next three records. Basically, I have that.
Cut them all. Triple album.
Write a song called Whiskey Riff. I feel like that's weird.
I got one called I Don't Whiskey Anymore. So that's
we'll send a legal document to say you have.
we'll give you a third.
We got a trademark. Yeah. There you go.
So funny. Yeah, man. So I'm always writing. I've got it all in the tank. We're going to go cut some demos in September. See where that leads. I've kind of got like side project type things going on that, you know, I think for me, I have my commercial side, but I have my edgy side. They're one and the same, but sonically they're just a little bit different in the sense of I've got an EP that we did just for the fans. It's called Honky Tonk Bullshit. I don't know if you guys have a copy. If you don't, I need to make sure you get a copy.
Send us one.
Yeah.
It's five songs that me and my producer went in and we just wanted to do something that was different from the record. Still 100% me, who I am. I wrote the songs, but it's got this edge to it that is a little more raw, a little more, not quite so polished as Shot Glass. It's the edgier side of me. It's the side that, wakes up hungover, stepping out of the bus, still smelling like, you know, last night's smoke from the bar versus the Randall that gets cleaned up.
Nudie suit Randall.
Yeah. Nudie suit Randall. Like it's me, but it's just a little bit more of a rougher side of me. It's called Honky Tonk Bullshit. Five songs. It's only available right now. It's only available at live shows, but that's about to change. So
I would love that. Yeah.
Cool.
Do you know, I hope this doesn't offend you, but like there's like a subgenre of music I think you'd be good at. I don't even know what you call it, but like, you know, does George Strait have that song Dance With Me? Or is this like a very, you feel like you're in Cabo, like Mexico music, like you want to be like on a beach in Mexico. I'm like, that's, if you need to throw a few of those in there. Time and time.
Some trumpets.
I'm not going to say Jimmy Buffett, but like, I'm not going to say Jimmy, but like very few guys, especially young guys could pull that off. And I was like,
it's almost a Tejano vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's basically what Stray did with Seashores of Old Mexico.
Right. Yeah. I love that. And I feel like you're one of the only people that can kind of like, if you ever get bored and want to
party, kind of does a little bit of that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Come on. I'm always down for trying out.
You're right. You brought a party. Wes, you're right. Like party does a little bit of that now.
Yeah, it does.
That's nice that like, I'm mad. I can't credit the account, but Grady Smith from you, our buddy, the great Grady Smith on YouTube, he shared a meme from somebody. It was like the, what's that show where the guys are like the Pawn Stars and they're like, the best I can give you is.
Oh yeah. Whatever.
Pawn Stars. Like, yeah. And they were like wanting to hear like country music on country radio. And they're like, the best I can give you is John Party. And it was like, cause it's like, John is so good. And it's like, people that are like super traditionalists are so happy that at least he's on radio because it was such a brutal bro country phase. And we love John Adamo recently. And it's like, that's encouraging. The Randall Kings of the world, the John Parties of the world, hell, even like the Luke Combs. It's like, it's swinging back, like Wes said, a little bit to that.
Carly's 90s. Back.
And to add
Dasha that, McBride and all those. Yeah.
Absolutely love John. I'm a big John fan. What he did with California Sunrise was literally set the tone for who he is and show off who he is. And it, once it came out with Heartache Medication. Yeah. Once he came out with Heartache Medication, you could tell that he was swinging a little bit more towards the traditional side of it, like a more Alan Jackson type of record. And I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
And you're watching it. He's already got radio. So now he's leading and channeling country music coming back on radio. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. I love that. Look, great way to end it. Yeah. Get us that album though, man. And we gotta see him in person and have some drinks, talk about life.
Yeah, I'm for it. Let's do it.
All right, Randall. Have a good show tonight.
Thank you. Cross
another one off the list tonight.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Knocking it off on the bucket list. Well, that's Steve. Appreciate you, boys.
Cheers, brother.
Enjoy the whiskey, and we'll see you down the Honky Tonk Highway. All right.
All right. See you, brother. See you, buddy.